Welcome to a series of conversations based on the book How to Lead When You Don't Know Where You're Going by Susan Beaumont. My name is Major Bryce Davies and I'm part of the Salvos Faith Communities Development Team. If you would like to explore the topics covered in this series, please contact us at faithcommunities@salvationarmy.org.au as we're happy to discuss these topics with you and to facilitate opportunities for you to have further conversations with your people. Today my guest is Commissioner Miriam Glewis, and we're going to have a look at the first chapter of the book, which is entitled An Introduction to Liminality. Let me just share with you a bit about what a liminal space is, according to Susan, and that is that there is a time in an organisation when we realise that the past is the past and we've got to leave that, and we kind of have exited that and kind of moved on, but we're in this space where we're not sure what the future looks like and we have to reinvent it. And it seems to me when I read that chapter that that captured a lot of what I see in the Salvation Army in these days. So I thought it would be good to have a chat with Miriam about some of the elements of that, I guess, season that we're perhaps in and see where we go. So welcome, Miriam. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Bryce. Good to be with you. And this is a very challenging and exciting subject, I reckon.
It is, isn't it? Because we both grew up in a Salvation Army that we loved, and I guess we had a picture in our head about how it would progress and grow through the decades, and we've had to confront some different realities to that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, we all kind of signed up and thought we'd win the world for Jesus, and now we think, what does that look like? And in very different days, because we're kind of postmodern, post-Christian, hopefully soon post-COVID, what's it going to look like in a space where people have come from other nations, people have walked away from the church, some people don't like the church. So what does it look like in our day, in our space, where things are not so black and white anymore, but there's lots of grey?
The book suggests that there's a sweet spot in liminality where creativity and innovation and new things can be embraced. But you don't just get to that sweet spot when you organise it. It kind of almost comes mysteriously and people are ready for change. Mm. Do you think we're at that point where people are ready for change, or do you think we're still kind of unsure how we could do the future without it looking like it did in the past?
I think COVID really helped that, because I think we went through this space of thinking, well, let's explore what it can look like. And I was in some spaces where that happened. But it was kind of like, oh, will we or won't we? And then COVID hit and everyone had to be online and start thinking differently. And they did. It was really creative and really good. And all of a sudden people thought, yeah, we can go there because we have to. Then COVID begins to stop and people think, oh, no, we'll just go back to the old. Because it's always easy to go back to the old, even though we knew it wasn't working. Mm. But how do we capture that creativity and the good that came of that? Because it was all about real community, all about how we did relationships and being instead of doing church. So how do we capture the best of that? Because that's kind of exciting, and say, you know, there is a new day without fear getting in the way.
One of the other liminal spaces we're in is in the leadership space. We just don't have the officers coming through. Yeah. We've got, like, we're not, it's not just a nice idea to think differently about training officers and raising up leaders. Mm. We have to do that now, don't we?
Yeah, and I reckon God's got a good plan in that. So I don't think we need to panic about that, but we've got to move on it. So it's kind of like, you know, there are great people out there, but what will they sign up to? And I think we have to have a look at that and say, we've got to work in teams. We've got to stop thinking that the leader has all the answers and come into rooms and say, okay, I can see someone who can succeed me. They're actually in the core right now, or they're in my faith community, or they're even out there in the community. I've got to pat them on the shoulder and say, you know what, this is what I see in you, and I'm going to give you every reason to shine, and I'll put into you what you need. So I think we've got leaders, but how will it look into the future, and how will we get people ready for that? Now, I'm not discarding officers. There'll always be a place for officers, auxiliary lieutenants, ministry workers, lay people, but what else? And I think that's the exciting space to explore.
She says in the book that liminal organisations need to unlearn old behaviours, challenge the status quo, experiment, take risks, and learn. Sounds like one of these things is to unlearn old behaviours, like only fully trained through the Salvation Army Training College, Salvation Army officers are valid leaders of faith communities. Mm. We've had that belief.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably the belief that I grew up with. Yeah. And there were others who could lead on the side of that, but essentially the top dog was the officer.
Yeah.
How do we unlearn that behaviour, do you think?
oh, look, I think it's become a bad behaviour, but you're right. I was taught in college and I thought the people were wonderful at the time, that you're the boss, you come up with the vision, you come up with the answers, you lead the people. And in these days, that just doesn't work. So it's got a bit boring as well, because we've become a sitting army rather than a mission of all believers, where everyone's on mission and we go out into the world, whether that's in our school or our job or to the ends of the earth. How do we come back to again that, you know, God's got something for you? You've got to find out what it is. You've got to find your passion for it and go after it, because that's about us all. And my ministry is as valid as your ministry is as valid as the kid who goes to school each week and in some way lives out their mission in that place.
So it challenges the status quo, because there's this belief that there's a calling and there's this spiritual authority that's put onto the shoulders of leaders, and that to have leaders who aren't properly trained, for want of a better word, or who haven't had this call on their life, but maybe see it as a five-year deal that they might lead in that way, we're going to have to break down some pretty sort of strong thinking in that space to accept leaders. Like, I come to sort of picture, I guess, the 75-year-old diehard salvo in the Corps who's going to be led by some 23-year-old who's just had an opportunity to lead the Corps because they've got a vision for their community.
Yeah.
How's that going to affect the status quo?
If God calls someone and we can put the right things into them, I think the world's changed in the sense that people feel often called to an area, to a passion, close to family sometimes, and they'll give their life to that for a certain period of time. Surely we've got to say that's valid, as much as it's valid to say I give my life to officership for a lifetime. So how do we validate, and how do we say all ministry is worthwhile? And to those who fear it, I started off as a 21-year-old. My goodness, I think of some of the messages that I preached and some of the things that I did, and I thought they must have gone mad listening to that week after week. But we all learn along the way. And I think, you know, some people have got their theological degrees, some people have got all sorts of degrees. It's just different ways of training and different ways of putting into people so that they can be all that God created them to be. So surely we would validate that in these days.
Yeah. The other thing she talks about is experimenting. And experiments don't always work, right? Mm. They sometimes fail. And it's almost like you experiment and go, okay, well, that didn't quite work. What have we learned from that? And how do we recalibrate and try again?
Yeah.
But there's this season, isn't there, where we're trying things and we're not sure. How can we be sure about what we've never done before?
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's such a fear factor. Like, will someone have my back? Am I going to get into trouble? And I saw a young guy having a go at something, and I thought, this is a young go-getter, and he's saying to me, can I change our church from meeting on a Sunday to meeting on a Thursday, and we'll have a meal and we'll do real community? And I thought, that sounds wonderful. I said, how do some of your older folk feel? And he said, oh, look, they think it's great because Sunday actually their families come, so Thursday suits them better. They get to engage with all of the people who are in community. Wonderful. Rings me up 2 weeks later. Are you sure that's okay? Am I going to get into trouble? I said, no, I'm going to get into trouble. Then a couple of weeks later, he said, are you really, really sure? I said, just go and do it. So if someone who's a go-getter has to unlearn that much and feel that he's got permission, that he's trusted, that he's got an inspirational vision, how much for someone who doesn't work in that way? Mm. So I think we've got to unlearn a whole lot of stuff and start thinking, how are we going to be the church in these days rather than do church? Mm. And that can look like a whole variety of things. So surely we want to experiment. And look, I've seen some of the most wonderful things come out of this time. And I've seen people go back too, because the first cranky person comes and says, how dare you touch? So how do we get past that to say, I'm going to be bold and very courageous. I'm going to listen to the Spirit of God, and whatever he says to me, I'm going to do. Because I think there are green shoots in a whole lot of places, but it's like a volcano's gone through, everything's black. So in this liminal space, surely we want to create and discover and try new things, because the world's totally changed. It's not the same anymore. Mm. People don't all grow up knowing Bible stories or knowing about Jesus. In fact, lots of people don't like the church. I think they still like Jesus. They love real community. So how do we engage in real community so things can be different? And that could be 1,000 different things.
Yeah, I remember a book that touched me when I was younger. It was called Where the Rivers Flow. And the concept of the book was, you know, rivers sometimes forge their own path. But we built our church over here, but the river's taken a different course, and the life and the spirit, if you like, has led into a different space. But our church structure's over here. We can't change that because there's so much investment there. But the spirit's moved to a different place, and it feels like we've got to be nimble enough to trust that the spirit, like, it's how do we discern where the spirit is, I suppose, is the real challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's always going to be about conversations and relationships. So I would see part of my church would be that I went to a coffee shop quite regularly, and I talked to this guy and got to know him because he barracked for Richmond and I barracked for Geelong, so we had a bit of banter. He knows everyone's name. So as I went to that coffee shop, he started to talk to me and engage with me, and his wife just brushes past one day and says, Salvation Army saved his life. Yeah. And I thought, I wonder what that's about. So I went really early one morning, have a chat to him, and I could hear his music playing, and I knew it was Islamic. And I said, tell me about your journey. And he told me this incredible journey, how he'd escaped from a nation. He'd come through refugee camps. He said it was just horrific. And he said, I came to Australia, knew no one, didn't know how I was going to survive. Salvation Army saved my life. Mm-hmm. And he said, amazingly, there's always been a salvo in my life since. Well, that's a journey I want to take. And that's being the church, isn't it? Doesn't mean he might ever come to church, but that is being Jesus in that situation to him. He's very open. He's happy to have the discussion. Is that okay? Absolutely. So how do we all take these journeys and see that church has changed? It might not necessarily be sitting in church on Sunday morning, but how will I be the church? How will I create real community where people do feel loved and served and celebrated, and that their life really counts? Because I think the world desperately needs real community.
Yeah. I mean, one of the ways that I think the spirit is moving is in parkrun. I can go on about this, and I'll promise I'll only mention it very briefly. But there's about 200 people who go to the parkrun that I go to each week. And one lady who actually, because I've had a lot of experience in rehab, her partner did rehab with me 20 years ago. She rocked up to parkrun, saw me, big hug, knew me. There's been a strong connection and a strong missional space ever since. The other thing that happened is the local regional Anglican Archbishop is a parkrun director. He comes regularly to direct parkrun, and I was chatting to him too, and he said, this is fabulous. You know, I'm here committed to this regularly because I see this as a congregation.
Yeah.
So if parkrun can be where the spirit is leading, where community is happening, Christians need to be heart and soul committed to those spaces. Yeah. And coffee shops are another one, isn't it?
Yes.
So absolutely. It's just like noticing where the little green shoots are coming up and going, actually, it's okay for me to nurture that.
That is so key, isn't it, Bryce? Because I think we've got to say, where are the people? Like, they're at the parkruns, they're at sport, they're in the pub choirs. Like, where's the new deal that's happening, and why are people there? Because they want to engage in something that counts. And I remember someone saying years ago, before we even thought differently, you don't always have to start things. Sometimes you just need to infiltrate and join up, love the people, share with them, and see what God does. And I think more and more that's how we have to think.
So the thing that still sticks a little bit is that we can go to these things, but the end game is still to get them to our churches on Sunday. And how do we shift from, or do we even need to shift from that? And like, what are the other models of church that seem to be the outcome of that? Because I can go to parkrun and build relationships and have fantastic conversations with people, but is it Jesus-y enough or churchy enough or conversion and life transformation enough if they don't come to church on Sunday? And what are the other ways of thinking about that journey that are valid?
I think Jesus talked quite strongly about go and make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. That might happen on church on a Sunday morning, and I think we'll always have gathered worshipping communities or church as we know it. I think other people engage in communities of hope, so places where we meet around a need. I was talking to a lady just recently, and she has a real heart to see people in domestic violence rescued. So what she did, she just gathered 8 people who had the same heart. She's a full-on Christian. That is church to her. She meets with them every couple of weeks. They sit around a table. They talk about life. They talk about faith, and they talk about their mission of domestic violence. What are they going to do? To her, that's valid church. So I think some people may never come to church, but how are you going to take them on a journey that leads them forward? Because I think it was very clear that Jesus said we need to make disciples. So how do we, first of all, build relationships? Because that takes a whole lot of time, doesn't it? It's probably not going to happen in church on Sunday morning. So how, in that context, do we make disciples? No matter what we're doing, how we building relationships so we get to take people on a journey? That could be a long, long time. And it is about demonstration, about proclamation, but it's got to be the right timing.
One of the things that Susan talks about in her book is the need to develop a new identity. The old identity is one thing. What's the new identity? And the old identity, if I was to summarise it and very simplistically, is we were an army, quite distinct with our uniforms and our music, quite distinctly visible at emergencies and known for our care of people in the drug and alcohol field and in the homelessness space. That's the Salvation Army. Not quite sure about what they do on a Sunday. That's never been our strongest identity, if you like, certainly in Australian culture. Is that still strong? And is that still really genuinely us? And what is the new identity that's forming? I mean, one of the things I found myself saying recently is Salvation Army's been always been fantastic at community, especially for people who don't feel like they belong. And I found myself saying to a group of running friends, we are really good at community and we're exploring how to do this in a way that is welcoming and acceptable and I guess in a more modern context to help community happen beautifully so that people talk about the things that are important and feel loved and valued and safe and get a glimpse of Jesus through that community.
Yeah, I think that would be summed up beautifully in a story I heard just recently. And I went to one of our recovery services and a lady who had an incredible story shared it that day. And I think the lovely thing was that she said straight up front, I came here kicking and screaming, but I realised I had a need. When people have a need, they tend to be far more open. And she pointed to the step, which was the old mercy seat. And she said, this is where I found God. And I found my community and I had to do the 12 steps. So I went through the 12 steps here. Then I had to do it again because I got hooked on flour and sugar. Then she said, and then I had to do it again when my daughter committed suicide. But she said, I found real community. And she pointed to heaven and she said, I found him. Everything was transformed by what happened there. And I think that's who we are when we're at our best. That's our identity. We love and help people. And we lead them towards Jesus. And that's kind of the best of both worlds when we find both. So we can't just be do-gooders and we can't be just people who are out there, you know, preaching the gospel. It's when they come together, that's the beautiful exchange, I reckon. Which is kind of what our initial identity was, but we lost it. And we're doing it in a new way. We have to.
Well, it's interesting. There was different identities for me. The core I grew up with at Camberwell was a really quite enclosed identity. People loved the Salvos but didn't want to join, and it was a nice community. It was great if you were into music, and the youth group was great, and it did grow, but it was a little odd. You know, it was like another world. If a person who wasn't part of the Salvation Army came to that, they'd just see a sea of policemen.
Yes,
you know,
that's right.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah,
and then hear music that was nothing like what they listened to on their radio. So it was quite unique. And then I moved into the drug and alcohol scene where, again, the community there was very rich and built around, well, you know, people who had a real vulnerable sort of space in their life and they were used to sharing and they really experienced grace and love, often like they'd never experienced it anywhere before through the rehab experience. So that was a rich community as well. But I guess those identities didn't kind of meet each other terribly well in some ways.
That's the issue, isn't it?
Homelessness space didn't really connect that well often with the more middle-class Sunday church model of community. And so I think that birthed street level, which is where I was involved for a long time, which was where we tried to build a regular, every day of the week community for people who weren't part of an eight-month program. People are still at street level 10 years down the track who have been part of that ever since it started. So that was another kind of level of community. But I wonder whether we're still trying to develop what the new level of community and engagement looks like in the modern world, and as more professionalization of our social work kicks in, and in some ways we're not really, it's not really appropriate to build the same sort of loving community that lasts for 20 years in our social institutions like You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's complexity in it now that there probably wasn't.
There is, isn't there? And I think it's in spaces where we can meet a need, isn't it? So if I look at Accessible Church, which really grew out of someone who had a heart for kids with great health needs or difficulties, and they said, how can we meet those needs? So it's in quite a wealthy area where mums and dads actually needed help with food or with transport, very practical stuff. But then they become part of a real community that says, and we want to explore something more. And out of that comes this Accessible Church, which looks nothing like normal church, but to them, that's their community where they worship in whatever way they want to. So it's how do we come to a point where people want a need met? And I think the church has got to say to God, you know, what is it about my community that I'm needed here for, rather than thinking, what am I going to do on a Sunday? And how do we meet around a real need to be able to be real and vulnerable and authentic where people are naturally attracted to something more?
So coming back to identity though, as a salvo officer, people have always seen me as someone who's front and centre with the poor in an institutional type setting or leading a church, leading a congregation. And so for people to view a salvo as just someone that could be their best friend and could actually be relatively normal in the sense that engaged in the sorts of things that they're engaged in is a different type of identity. People haven't seen the salvos like that. They've seen them as quite different to that.
Yeah.
So is it part of our challenge to evolve a new identity that if you meet a salvo, you're going to meet someone who's incredibly warm and friendly and loving and is prepared to have proper conversations and is also someone who's good to talk to about the deeper things of life.
Yeah.
Is it as simple as that? Or like, where are
we heading? It is, but I think that's a massive shift for some people because it's like my life is tied up in the church and how do I release myself from that in order to develop those deep relationships? And some are thinking, well, I'm not going to be there long enough, so how do we allow people to stay long enough in order to develop the relationships over long term? And I have to say, some of my best times have been with people I've built relationships with on advisory councils or things that would be a little bit unexpected, but I hear their life story and I do life with them and I end up loving them and just we take this lovely journey. So how do I put myself in spaces that aren't necessarily just the church? Because I think that's really, really key, that we are engaging in real, authentic relationships, both within and without. So that's a bit of a shift because we've got to move away from what we know and what's natural to, is it a park run or what is it for us? Is it around a cafe or is it young mums who engage with the drop-off at school? What is it that is my natural bent that I can actually engage with people who I actually really enjoy being with?
So liminal space isn't a new concept. The book goes through incredible amount of biblical characters who were living life one way and then something happened and everything changed and they were stuck in this liminal space for a little while. Like there's Noah, for example, and you know, this whole space where he was in the ark for 40 days and then came to a whole new world, you know, this incredible story. And Joseph, you know, all of these characters are shifted from the known to this space where they just didn't know what was going to happen next.
Yep.
And they had to try and find a way to explore what was like even the people of Israel in slavery. All of these are liminal spaces where it's not quite where it should be and it's not anything like the old way.
Yep.
And they had to invent a new way. Is there a biblical story that attracts you or that aligns for you?
It would be the Israelites because I think that stunning story of, you know, Moses leading them to the Red Sea and how scary would that have been for him to think, God, are you going to come through right now? Because you're jolly well better. Yeah. And he does. And then, you know, this liminal space where they're in the wilderness and spend way too long there because they start whinging and grumbling and all of a sudden fear kicks in, take us back. Even though they didn't like it, take us back because that is the known. And I think that's a big lesson for the church right now. And then I love the story of crossing the Jordan because it's in flood and it looks all very, very scary. And oh my goodness, we don't know what to do, but we're told to get our feet wet. And when the leaders get their feet wet, the space opens up and they can cross. Now, I reckon some ran through there, terrified. Some didn't want to go because it was too scary. But the leaders had to step out and say, we will take a new way and we will go to the promised land. So I think we've got to be prepared to take the time to say, you know what, we don't know what to do, but our eyes are on you and I can't take the space alone. So I am very comfortable to get into rooms and say, you know what, we don't know what to do, so let's wrestle it and let's think about what this might look like in a postmodern, post-COVID, post-Christian world, and don't be afraid of it, because we're not going back. We cannot go back. We're in this space right now where everything's different. Dream big and say, God, what might it look like? I think the keys are, it's about relationship, it's about community, it's about vulnerability, it's about authenticity and saying, none of us know, but we're going to trust.
Yeah. We've had a lot of conversations recently about what it means to have a Jesus conversation, for example, and what it means to make Jesus the center of our communities.
Hmm.
And I wrestle with this a lot because I think, well, as long as we've said Jesus five times, we've had the Jesus conversation.
Hmm.
But often I've had conversations with people where I just know they've trusted me with their heart and they're wrestling with the meaning of their life, or they're trying to find hope, or they're trying to wrestle with grief, or, you know, those really significant conversations that I'll often have. And I guess in the modern thinking, we kind of feel like we've got to pull that around somehow to get them to say the sort of the sinner's prayer and to come along to church on Sunday. Whereas I just question in their postmodern world where people are thinking a little differently to maybe they did 50 years ago as to how to introduce the person of Jesus and the relationship with Jesus into our conversations. I think that's shifted a huge amount as well.
Mm.
And we're not that good at it. We don't know. Because we don't want to have the awkward Jesus-y conversation,
we're
almost afraid to make friends because we're worried about how to do that and make the relationship weird. And yet we want to have significant relationships.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Oh, and I think this just has so many factors to it. So, you know, if you're a gifted evangelist, you're still going to go out and see people saved. But most of us are not gifted evangelists. So I reckon this vulnerability and authenticity part is key. So no one can dispute my story. So it's like we're just telling stories. And you said before about your friend who engaged with you and then had an issue in their life and knew you were the Jesus person in the conversation. So how could you help? Now, it doesn't mean you got to go full on with the Jesus conversation, but they know who you are because you've done the relationship with them.
Well, I think they know that they can take to the bank that I will always be loving and gracious and attentive to them and treat them with respect. And those key values that are part of my Christian heritage and part of who I am as a follower of Jesus, I think those are the things that people are attracted to.
Yes.
And I guess the challenge for me is when and how do I get them to sign up to it and find that for themselves without it being weird? And how long does that take? And if I've had a relationship with someone for 6 months and haven't had that conversation, have I got to sort of manipulate that so I have that conversation? Or, you know, those are the sort of things that I think modern people who are people of faith are wrestling with.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think the key there is without being weird, because, boy, building a relationship is so key, isn't it? Are we going to take the time? Because I think there does come a point where people will trust you enough to ask the more, or you can say the more, but it can't be forced ever, and people pick that a mile off these days, don't they? So how is it just natural that comes in at some point? But it's not even then about saying, you know, you've got to come to church, you've got to get saved. How do we enjoy this kind of beautiful exchange where it just becomes a natural part of who we are and what we do, and we share from our heart? Because I think we've got to live like Jesus, live for Jesus, and there will come a time to talk about it. I just think that will happen quite naturally.
Yeah.
But we can't fear it. I think, you know, we think we've got to know every part of the Bible and they're going to ask scary questions. It's like my friend who, you know, go to the coffee shop and have a chat with. That's just natural. And we've got to be ready for him to share about Islam, for me to share about Jesus, and for that to be okay.
Mm. Susan talks about this sense of disconnection and almost not sureness that people feel in the liminal space where they're, she describes it as like being at the airport where you're just there, you're not going to engage with the person sitting next to you because you know you're only going to be here for a little while and then you're going to go off to some other place. So you're kind of sit in the liminal space a little bit apathetic or a little bit discouraged and a little bit sort of bland.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether you see a little bit of that in some salvos who are in this liminal space, and because we're not confidently forging ahead. In some ways we are, but in other ways we're still not sure what the future looks like.
Mm.
And it's almost like a deadness that can come upon us.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think I'm a person who just believes for the best always. But I think there's a lot of people who are very fearful and think, oh, where on earth's the army going? Where's the church going? Mm. Where's the world going? Like, I met a young couple on holidays who said, I said to them, what are you doing here? They just said, oh, we just travel the world now because we don't think it's going to be around for much longer.
Mm.
And mm. I think there's probably people who wonder, is the church going to survive all of this? I have great hope, but, and the but is, that we really have to create the new. Because I think there is a lot of, a lot of apathy, a lot of wondering, a lot of fear, a lot of what will it mean for me and for my kids into the future? Is this all okay? I think there's lots of questions, and perhaps we've been scared of the questions in the past. I don't think we need to fear the questions. I think we need to ask them. I think we need to wrestle, to explore them. And I still think there is that great hope that Jesus does come through in really difficult times. He shows that again and again when we think, oh my goodness, everything's going bad. And then he comes through in a new way, but usually in a new way. And I think some of the things of the past are not going to work in these days. So I think we have to discover together out of this liminal space, what is it that will work and how are we going to trust God to take us there?
Mm. She talks about the liminal space being uncomfortable. And so we're tempted to panic and either go back to what we've already known or fly into something that we're not really sure, but fly into something that's unwise, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And there's a place here for patience and a place here to wait and watch.
Yeah.
Like the people of Israel were 40 years and you could argue that that was just a waste of time, but maybe they needed a long time to kind of really know that it was time to move on.
Yeah.
And how do you really know that you really know that you really know?
Mm.
Well, sometimes it's because you've been patient and you've really listened carefully and trusted over a season. Because I guess that sort of indifference can paralyze people and we just give up and don't try. But I think one of the things that Susan talks about in the book is that the liminal space requires us to have more integrity and more character than we do when we know where we're going. So it's like we don't shut down. We have to awake. We have to watch. We have to be robust in our conversations and exploring more. Otherwise, we do become apathetic. But it doesn't mean we know what we're doing and where we're going. It just means we've still got character in the midst of the liminal space.
Yeah. And I think there's two dangers there. The danger is of going too slow, because I kind of think the days are urgent and exciting. And the danger is going too fast and saying, well, this is the way we're going to go and everyone will do the same and blah, blah, blah. That's not going to work.
Mm.
So, yes, how do we take the time to think through? And look, I think it can be 100 different things, but I think we've got to stick with the character and what do we know right now? So we know that people are dying for a relationship. I remember talking to a young couple on a train. They looked so lonely and I said, are you okay? And they said, no, we've come from another nation. And here in Australia, everyone comes home, drives into their driveway, shuts their door. We never see anyone again. They said, in our country, at night time, we would go out in the streets. We'd be with family. We would eat together. Mm. We would care about each other. We are so lonely. So I think we know people are lonely. I think we know that people are looking for a real community. I think people want something more, but they'll explore a whole lot of things to find out what it is. I think family is becoming more and more key, whatever that looks like in these days.
Mm.
So with the clues and with the character, how do we take journeys that could be 100 different things and not be afraid to have a go and fail?
Yeah.
So I think it's taking the things we really know, because God's at work everywhere. So where is he at work where I am? Whether that's, you know, you going into poor and marginalised community, or me working with people in different contexts, it doesn't matter. Or is it that school for kids who are experiencing really difficult health problems? Where is it that I can connect and know that my relationships will be authentic and vulnerable, and that I will take journeys with people, and somewhere along the line, they'll know that I'm a Jesus person?
Yeah.
And that may lead to church, it may not lead to church, but we're about being Jesus people in our communities and sharing that love in whatever way we can.
A couple of things that I find, like I'm in a running group on a Tuesday night, and I'm just a friendly guy at these places, make sure every newcomer comes along. One lady was there one time, and she was there for the first time, and I just went up and said hello. And it turns out she's a Ukrainian lady, and she's been isolated for 12 months because she just can't face the world. Her family's in Ukraine, and they're constantly under threat, and she's in touch with them as much as she can, but she's just a very fragile lady in this space. And she loves running. She came out to the running group, and the very first night she was there, it was a big deal for her to turn up.
Yep.
And it was a big deal that someone like me went up and said g'day.
Yeah.
And welcome to her. And she's been every week, and she's now part of chat groups and running trail runs, and she's engaged in the running community. Everything about that feels like the Salvation Army's mission to me.
Yep.
Now, I haven't done all of that, but I've contributed to that and been part of that, and it feels like that's my mission to do that. And it doesn't take much for us to be watching and waiting for those sort of things to happen. Now,
that's it.
Yeah. I'm also part of this men's walk and talk group, which is just guys going for a walk every Sunday and every Thursday and just having a chat. Again, I'm part of that community, and it's flourishing. Like, they had 120 people to the walk and talk the other week. Is it a church-based thing? Is it a Christian-based thing? Well, not overtly, but the heart of it actually is. It's getting guys to talk so that there's the domestic violence and, you know, their loneliness and the suicide rates. All of these things, which are massive issues in our society, are being dealt with by this group.
Yeah.
And me being alongside the leaders of that group and being a part of that group, just heart and soul, has felt like church.
Yes. And I think that's a real key, isn't it? The aim is not to try to get people to church. The aim is for us to be the church and take church to the people in that sense, where we gather and we have those conversations and we have that community. Because you are the Jesus person at the centre of that, aren't you?
Yeah. Mm. And I think that's that as an officer, that's what I'm hoping we could teach our people. Like, that's what being salt and light in the world looks like.
Yes.
And if that doesn't result in them coming to church on Sunday, or you putting a uniform on and, you know, the influence of that is like the mustard seed. It just spreads and it is organic, and it has this power to multiply far more than we can ever control. Mm. So there's something exciting.
And I think that's a bit like one of your friends who is in one of the running groups who said, I don't want to go to normal church, but she would now say that is her church when you run together.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that okay? Of course it is.
Well, I guess it's still, the question is, what's the discipleship journey with that? And how do we get people to deeply know their relationship with Jesus? That's the bit that I still struggle to find a solution to that lands.
Yeah.
And I think admitting that is part of the liminal space that we all need to be in. What is that? How do we do that journey?
I think the simpler we keep it, the better, lots of times. And the easiest way I've seen is these discipleship huddles. So it's just reading a little bit of scripture and saying, what is Jesus saying? What are we going to do about it? So start really simple, I reckon. And I was with some of the girls from one of those groups, and all they did was each day they had a verse, and then they would come together once a week and say, well, this is what I think was saying. Mm. And the lady who was the mature Christian could just guide the conversation, and they loved it. Mm. So it doesn't have to be difficult, but what's the pace of the discipleship journey that's okay for the person? And am I prepared to sit there and take that pace and move it forward? Because I think still we want instant results, don't we? Thinking, you know, got to get them saved, got to see them fully discipled and fully mature. Well, obviously we'd all love that. But what's the pace of the journey for the person? Yeah. And am I listening out to the Spirit to hear that?
Yeah. I read again Mike Frost's book, Bless, you know, the
Bells.
And that just seemed a really palatable way to be Christian in this world. Like, there's lots of models there that can work. I guess it's just having the courage to try that and invite people to that when the time is right. And I think that's the key, isn't it?
And I think anyone wants to take a journey where you trust someone, where you have the conversations, where you eat together, where you explore, and where you take a journey that leads to something that matters. Because I think everyone wants significance in their life and they want to belong, don't they?
Yeah.
So why does a guy, you know, run from Western Australia to Sydney because he believes in homelessness? What is the significance that people want to find in life, and how do they belong? And I think as the church, we actually offer that But we better not say it's about just come to church on a Sunday. Like, what is it that I want to give my life to? And helping people find that is really, really key, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you been in a liminal space yourself at some season in your life? And what was that like? And what did you need to move from and to, would you say?
There was a time, because I'm a visionary strategist, where I just, you know, love to dream new dreams and see them go. And God literally said to me, he said, I'm not going to give you any more dreams and visions and direction until you sit with me and let me heal you over a certain thing. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I didn't like it because I thought, no, this is not me. But I had to deal with something that had really hurt me. And probably no one ever knew that. But he said, you wait. It was kind of like, you know, sit beside the quiet waters, sit in that space, let go of things so you can move to the new. And I think that's what liminality is really about.
Yeah.
It's this space that is so unknown and so foreign where I have to let go of some things in order to go forward. I can tell you exactly the day, and I know who was with me, when he said, okay, you've let go of it, now you're ready for the next step. And I think, oh my goodness, it's uncomfortable and I didn't like it, but it was necessary to go to the new. And I think that's what liminality is about. But in the new, you discover the better. So how do you make sure you don't go back and sit with what was? How do I not fear that? How do I sit with it? And then how do I take the new journey? And I think that's where we are right now. We don't have to fear it. We don't have to go back. We don't have to be upset by the first person who doesn't agree with it. We have to say, okay, what is it? What have I learned? How am I going to get there?
Yeah. I think for me, when I was hearing you say that, I think for me this liminal space has happened for me too, where I've had the courage to admit there are some things that I'm pretending I believe that I really am not sure about. And that's scary because, you know, as an officer, you're supposed to believe all the things clearly, and the sense of liminality has been, well, if I'm not sure about that, where does that leave me in this fuzzy space? But I think what's emerging is a new, solid, the second half of life almost, where everything was sure and certain in the first half of life, but in the second half of life, you embrace the mystery or the paradoxes, and you're able to sit with a bit more dualistic thinking, like things aren't as black and white as you thought they were. But it's very uncomfortable to not be as sure. And so you have to kind of trust your gut a bit more, or take a path that you're not 100% sure of, but you're going to give it a go because it's the best option. You know? And that's a liminal space potentially as well, where I think a lot of postmodern people are at. Do we have the courage to question things? And is the liminal space that will create too terrifying to exist in, so we don't go there and we stay almost with a childlike faith?
Yeah, and I think that's the journey lots of people are taking, and it's really scary for some people, and for others it's a delight. And some, as you're sitting in the middle, you think, oh, gee, I've never thought of that before, and I do need to explore it. So I think it's having the safe people to explore it with, isn't it? And sit in spaces where the wrestle's okay, and I'm not going to be judged for it, but I am going to come out of it probably knowing a little better what I really do believe and what I think.
And I would think with a more mature faith, a more nuanced faith, a more grace-filled faith, where you can sit with people's different journeys.
Yeah, and that's okay, isn't it? Because we need to learn that, don't we? Because everyone is taking a different journey. Doesn't mean I'm not solid about some things, but it does mean that I can explore others.
Yeah. So liminal space, pretty normal really, isn't it? It's not something to be afraid of.
And
it's something that has been a part of biblical history, part of every church's history, and seems like part of our history right now. So interesting time to be a leader in the Salvation Army in a liminal space.
It is sometimes scary, often very exciting, and I think we just got to experiment, say, God, show us the way and we'll have a go. And when you get your feet wet, he usually comes through, doesn't he? Well, he always comes through, I reckon, but that's exciting.
Yeah, for sure. Great to chat with you, Miriam. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Bryce.
Thanks for listening to this leadership series. If you would like to explore these themes and conversations more, please feel free to contact us at faithcommunities@salvationarmy.org.au. Bless you.